Hey, good afternoon, Juno. It's about 3 seconds before 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTLO Juno in Juneau, Alaska. And we are going to have a wonderful Juno afternoon today. The guests on the show include Wade Rogers and Joel Osborne. They're here to tell us about a session that's going on in the KTOO studio on Thursday, where you can bring the sails off your sailboat, spread them out on the floor, and they'll even have a sewing machine down there to try to help you with the repairs. Wednesday's KRNN Showcase Concert with C. Scott Fry. He's bringing his guitar. We'll probably have some live music. Darren Snyder will be here to tell us about April Fowls Day, the upcoming Chicken Summit. And Margie Hamburger will drop in to highlight Juno Community Charter School for us. The weather looks like it's going to continue snowing through the week, and then around Thursday night or Friday, we will start to see some snow mixed with rain, and then by Saturday night, it'll be snow mixed with rain, and the temperatures going up into the near 40s. So it does get to eventually be spring again, and we'll stay tuned for that. Right now, National Native News in a few minutes, our first guest.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The correctional facility on the Wind River Reservation is being renovated, leaving the facility at about half of capacity. Wyoming Public Radio's Irina Zhorov reports.
While the jail is under construction, people brought in for minor offenses are let go with a notice to appear in court, instead of being held like they normally would be. Minor offenses are mostly alcohol-related, like public intoxication, simple assault, trespassing, and disturbing the peace. Chief Judge of the Shoshone and Arapaho Tribal Court, John St. Clair, says only about 10% of people who are issued a notice to appear actually appear.
What they do is if they get crowded, then, you know, Saturday night or whatever, they'll release a couple of people, have them come back the next week or a little later. Then the person comes back at the time we're supposed to come back. And that's the problem. When they come back, then they just go to court like they were brought straight over.
St. Clair says tracking people down for these minor offenses creates a lot of extra work. The women's side of the jail recently underwent renovation, and construction on the men's side started in December, so both sexes are currently sharing the women's quarters. It's not clear when the project will be completed. For National Native News, I'm Irina Zhurov.
Navajo Nation officials are disappointed a gaming compact failed to receive a vote in the New Mexico legislature before the end of the session. The tribe operates two Las Vegas-style casinos in New Mexico. And as Rita Daniels reports, tribal officials are concerned about jobs and its gaming investment in the state.
The current Navajo Nation gaming compact with New Mexico is set to expire in 2015. However, with the state's next legislative session focused only on budget matters, tribal officials say there will be no chance for the bill to be heard next year, leading to an expiration of the agreement. In other words, come 2015, the Navajo Nation will likely have to find another way to continue gaming operations in New Mexico without an existing gaming compact with the state. Under the new proposed compact, New Mexico would have received an increased percentage of revenue, nearly 10% of casino slot machine profits, while the Navajo Nation would be allowed to build up to three more Vegas-style casinos within the state. The Navajo Nation began negotiations for the new compact with New Mexico in 2008, and the plan was met with some resistance from other tribes and pueblos who could be forced to compete with the new casinos. Officials say in the wake of a recession and automatic federal budget cuts, New Mexico should keep an open mind about where money comes from and continue helping programs at a tribal level. For National Native News, I'm Rita Daniels.
An Alaska native snowboarder wins a bronze medal at the World Cup over the weekend in Switzerland. Kalyn Chythaluk-Sifsoff from Alaska and her teammate finished third in the women's team snowboard cross race. The Anchorage Daily News reports she medaled in past individual games. The 2010 Olympian is said to have battled injuries since the Olympics, but has been healthy this season. A Special Olympian is inducted into the American Indian Hall of Fame. 32-year-old Brady Tanner was inducted Saturday and joins athletes like Jim Thorpe and Billy Mills. According to the Associated Press, Tanner has won hundreds of trophies and medals, including three gold from the 2011 World Special Olympics in Greece. Tanner has lifted weights at Haskell Indian Nations University for years. His record includes the deadlift at 575 pounds, a 625-pound squat, and bench press at 450 pounds. On this day in 1933, Tommy Solomon died after an illness and heart failure. He's said to be the last full-blooded Moriori of the Chatham Islands off the coast of New Zealand. Solomon dropped out of school at the age of 13 and became a skilled farmer and racehorse breeder. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, with funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PIC-CLIC-GIVE when filing online for your PFD. When you select KNBA-FM, Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, you support National Native News. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's just about 6 minutes after three. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My first two guests are doing something that I consider to be a little bit unusual. They're inviting you all down to KTOO's television studio tomorrow night. And you can bring the sails off your sailboat, spread them out on the floor, and these guys will have with them a big sail-rated sewing machine and all kinds of other stuff to give you some tips and clues on how to take care of that. With me are Wade Rogers and Joel Osborne. They're both with Southeast Alaska Sailing. Is that your... That's the name of your Southeast Alaska Sailing.
Yeah, Seas for short.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So what inspired you to tell everyone to rip the sails off their boats and bring them down to the studio?
Well, if you look outside, Pat, it doesn't look a lot like spring, but we know it's just right around the corner. Mm-hmm. And the event is called Sailor's Talk. It's part of our, sort of our educational component of our nonprofit group. And we do these in the winter just to kind of keep our finger on the pulse of sailing and our appetite sort of whetted for that. The event is actually on Thursday at the studios. And, we're just trying to gear up to get people out and get them involved and sort of educated on sort of the fine art of sailing.
So if I thought that I needed some work done on my sails, other than maybe a visible rip or something like mm-hmm. that in the sail, how would I know that I needed to come to this event?
If you have taken a look at your sails, you know, let's say you were putting them away last season and you notice some tears or spinnakers are typically made out of half ounce or 0.75 ounce nylon and stuff like that, this is a really good chance to put them out on the floor, examine them closely. We'll have a Sailrite sewing machine there. I'm bringing a big box of sail tape and some hand sewing kits and stuff like that. And we'll also be doing things like measuring your sails for handicap rating for your boat for some of the races that we sponsor throughout the year.
So what else do you sponsor throughout the year?
This is Joel.
Yeah, hi.
Yeah.
We sponsor a series of races, and it's our main sailing series here in town, and it's called the Seas Cup. And the Seas Cup is basically our weekend races. Sometimes they're a day race, sometimes it's an overnight, but every one of the Seas Cup races is starting at either a Juneau or a state harbor facility and ending at a Juneau or state harbor facility. The typical distance for those races is about 18 miles.
Hmm.
So it's really a sort of thing that, pretty much any sailboat can handle. And so it's the sort of thing that we try to get out and do throughout the summer. It starts, I think the first race is on May 12th, and then the final race is on Labor Day weekend. And, so it's the Seas Cup, and we've got another race that we do around Admiralty Island. And every 2 years we alternate, but this year we're doing the full race, which is a nonstop to Baranoff Island and then a nonstop back.
Mm-hmm.
And we always end in Baranoff Island during the solstice and soak in the hot springs for a while.
Oh.
It's kind of a nice little race. Once you get there, you've earned it.
Great
idea.
Yes, definitely.
And
particularly if it's low wind and you have to do the whole thing with
low wind
with
high
a big
rain.
Whisper operation. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, and sort of the goal behind the Admiralty Race Series especially the Spirit of Admiralty is our nonstop race. It's 24/7 basically until you get to Baranof, which is the first mandatory layover. That race is specifically sort of designed to get folks comfortable with being on the water 24 hours out of the day, doing watch schedules. You're up at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning having coffee with your crewmate, while the rest of your crew are down below sleeping off watch. So you get used to the whole watch system, and it's real preparatory for offshore and coastal sailing if you plan to, you know, go down the west coast of the United States or sail around in Mexico and stuff like that.
Now, that word crew brings up a topic here, and that is the fact that you don't have to own a sailboat to get out on the water in a sailboat.
That's correct.
Because everybody's looking for crew.
That's correct. We're always looking for crew. Crew rotate in. People move in town and move out of town. Our website has a good spot for people to register, and Joel might provide some info on that.
Yeah.
In fact, I wasn't quite sure about it before I came to this interview, and so I thought I'd go out and take a look at it and make sure it was still there. In fact, it's bold. It was never bold before, but now it's bold, and it says register, and it's on our homepage. So if you're a potential crew member, you're thinking about coming out and you'd like to do some sailing, go to our website, click on register, and there's no private information on there other than your first and last name, and we'll, you know, leave us a little note on what kind of sailing you've done in the past, but we'd be glad to get more people out, because there's two things you have to have in order to go sailing, and that's a boat and crew. And we have boats right now, but finding crew during the summer isn't always easy, so we'd like to get some more participation.
You said what experience you've had. How much experience are you looking for in these in people who volunteer to be crew?
Zero experience would be fine.
Okay.
In most cases, you know, in the case of where a boat has absolutely no crew and they're looking for maybe an experienced person to
be a captain or something like that,
get up on the foredeck or you know, handle the tiller while or the steering wheel while you go ahead up on deck. That would be the one person I'm usually looking for that would have to have some sort of experience. But other than that, I can train pretty much everybody else on my boat.
Sure. And a lot of what we do as far as the training end of it for people who have never sailed before is what I like to do is get them out during some evening events. We also sponsor an event called Get Out the Boat. And those are typically held on Wednesday evenings right out here in Gaspeno Channel. Not on a Wednesday, if the weather's really nice on a Tuesday, you'll oftentimes see two or three of us out there not racing, but anytime you get two sailboats close to each other, there's always a race.
That's right.
And what we like to do, or what I like to do, is sort of give each person a specific task, like releasing the active sheet on the jib, or taking in the new active sheet on the jib, or steering. Helming the boat is a little more technical because there's a lot you have to kind of keep track of. And after a while, just doing that one task, you get to see how it's all interrelated and how all the systems on the boat work together. So that's our Wednesday evening series.
That's really informal, too.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of anybody who wants to get their boat out. You know, the more the merrier sort of a situation. There's no race course involved. It's really just people getting out and sailing and showing kind of a sailor's show of force, so to speak, during the week. And
not to mention finally getting the thing off the slip.
Exactly. Working the algae off the bottom.
Yeah. There's a reason why you pay that slip fee, and it's not to keep it in the slip. So, and that, again, you know, as part of our educational outreach is to not only get crew trained up, but a lot of times we'll have people who have purchased a sailboat, because everybody always dreams about, you know, that romantic sunset sail, who aren't comfortable. And many of us have had several years of sailing experience. Mine goes back to high school, for example. I've done the Admiralty race probably 10 or 11 times. I've forgotten over the years. So you've got some people who've got some pretty good experience, and you know, we'd be happy to get out on your boat and take a look. Maybe look at your systems, making some recommendations on things that you might try that are a little different, you know, fixes and repairs. And take you out and just show you some of the basics.
The weather's really crazy nowadays, but what's the primary sailing season in June?
Gosh.
Really, it's May through the beginning of September. Mm-hmm. And we actually run the Get Out the Boat series through the end of September. Of course, our last Seas Cup race is Labor Day weekend. But, you know, I've sailed through October. I sailed one time on Thanksgiving Day. It was a really nice day. There's a crew member in our club who had to move his boat around Douglas in the middle of the winter. Was able to convince some friends, unknowing friends, to go with him. And I don't know what the weather was, but you can guarantee it was cold.
Yeah.
And and they've done that. But, you know, the prime sailing season, I'd say, is May through September.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And no experience required. Go on the website, sign up to be crew, and the next thing you know, you'll be buying your own sailboat and coming down here and fixing your sails on Thursday night.
Anymore, yeah. But there are some, you know, things gear-wise that people will need to have to be comfortable, and the investment in that is pretty minimal as far as, you know, fleece clothing and some lightweight rain gear and safety equipment and stuff like that. But it's pretty small.
Outstanding. So the event is tomorrow night. Thursday night.
Thursday evening.
Thursday night, 5 to 8 p.m., It's right here at KTOO downstairs in the studio. Bring the sails off your boat and lay them on the floor and see if we can help you fix them up, right?
Absolutely, and bring your best sails.
Yeah, and just come on out.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay. Thank you so much, guys. Bring your sails down to the studio in here at KTOO on Thursday night, and the Southeast Alaska Sailing Organization will spread them out on the floor with you and help you measure them so that you can figure out your handicap. And if there are any little rips and tears in there, they'll have a commercial sewing machine set up on in the studio, and a chance to meet some of the folks who organize the sailboat events around Juneau. My next guest is organizing, along with a bunch of other people, a really unique concert that's going to happen at the Goldtown Theater on Wednesday night, I think?
Tomorrow evening, if I'm
tomorrow
so
evening, yeah. So with me is C. Scott Fry, and I guess anyone who heard him say tomorrow evening, I think it is, then they know who I'm talking to because his voice is so distinctive.
goodness.
Anyway, so welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What are you planning on doing at with Harrison B. and Katie Bowsler doing the hosting?
It's going to be a showcase kind of. She'll ask some questions, you know, about where we came from, how we got into what we do, why we do what we do, the process, I guess, which is, I have a hard time explaining, but how we write songs or why we write songs and what we think about and what we do with them. But it should be a question answer, not just necessarily all music, but a, kind of an informative type of showcase series to spotlight, like I said, where we came from. And
yeah. So she's billed this thing as Americana from Nashville to Alaska, because I guess Harrison B. runs out of Nashville, and you're running out of Juneau now.
Yes, sir.
Did you leave for a while? Were you?
I was in Madison, Wisconsin for 5 years.
Yeah, okay.
Running around the Midwest with a jug band called Boo Bradley.
That fits, good, I fun. Guess, somehow. Yeah, it sounds like fun. Yeah.
Guitar, got a fellow with a Rinky Tink National Steel guitar, me on the upright bass, and a gentleman, Brad, out of the Boo Bradley with the scrub board he built. Well, he bought the old-timey scrub board, and he put all the contraption and stuff on it himself. And the silly thing is if you look up washboards on Wikipedia, halfway down the page is a picture of my friend Brad wearing this contraption that he built when it says Busker Washboard Player.
Yeah. A couple of years ago, we had a group that was the key artists for the Folk Fest who came up. And one of those guys had a washboard that had, I think he had everything on there except maybe a transmission and modified mufflers. It was it was an amazing contraption, and he could get some interesting sounds together
to
augment a piece of music.
I was always used to the little kids coming up to the big old bass going, wow, look at that. I want to touch it, and they're all smiling and shy, but with him in the band and the contraption thing he was wearing, that's what mesmerized them all.
That got them all. So did you sing with that jug band?
I sang pretty much backups for the most part. Boo did all of the singing because it was his band. So
Yeah.
I was delegated once again to the role of the sideman.
Did you like that?
I don't mind it at all.
Yeah, relaxes you a little bit?
Yeah, less responsibilities. Don't have to do all the booking work and all the driving and calling all the songs and figuring out what to do and what not to do and I'll leave that up to somebody else. I just show up on time and play my parts.
So a lot of your music has a real blues character to it. And then every once in a while, when I'm listening to one of your songs, I'm thinking it kind of slid over into old-timey Western. You got two or three different strains coming in there that you're working with to make your music.
I kind of pull from all over. You know, I mean, I grew up listening to all kinds of music. I like to say that the Stones took me everywhere I needed to go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they always had their finger on the pulse, whether it was the folk scene or the new wave scene or the punk rock scene. So via them, I'd find something I liked and just keep digging deeper and deeper and deeper. And I'd hear something I liked and find out that guy didn't write it. So I'd research up some more to find it, eventually end up with a guy like Mississippi John Hurt or Johnny Cash or the guys that, you know, worked with Johnny Cash,
because
there's a lot of it out there. Definitely a lot of music out there, and I gravitate towards the bluesy or folky side.
Mm-hmm.
But there's definite little bit of swing in some of it.
But your range is really, it gives you a lot of ability to pick up everything from a blues down to the kind of country western direction. Mm-hmm. You can sort of slide your voice right around all those things because you've got a nice nice
broad. I'm not sure if I do that on purpose, but I guess I got lucky there.
Yeah. And I'm thinking of a couple of particular cuts that you can listen to if you go out on your website. One of them, you got this really nice baritone crack in your voice. It's right down there at the bottom end of the baritone range, and it just kind of grabs you when you let it slide down into that.
I wonder which one that is.
I'm trying to think the title of it. I can't.
That sounds like The Days Before the War, I think.
Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty.
Which is really kind of almost a poem. There's a.
It is. Yeah. You know, I started off, after I got into writing it, decided it was a protest song.
Yeah.
And then the more I listened to it, the more people interacted to it, I found out that they thought of it as more of this pro-American hero song from the war. And I was like, well, that's interesting. I'm not going to pop your bubble and tell you that it's a protest song. I'm like, hey, that's great. You know, that's great. Yeah. Whatever you see into it, it's fine with me.
Yeah. And then what was the inspiration for the Chocolate Jesus?
Oh, that one. That's one that me and Sammy covered.
Okay.
That one is from Tom Waits.
Okay.
Sammy, he's my running partner in the band. I play in the Devil's Club. And he tends to pull somehow religious matter,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, spiritual songs of hope and redemption out of these really dark sounding type of blues songs, which is, I always find it amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, blues and gospel are so close to each other that mm-hmm. you know, there's hardly any room mm-hmm. between them. So, yeah, yeah. So, are you going to play with Harrison?
At the show, we haven't really talked about that part tomorrow night. I imagine if we get a chance to get together, I'll back him up on a couple of things or something.
Yeah.
But we are going to play some together this weekend. I think Sam and I are going to back him up, and then he's going to sit in with us on the next night.
Now, during the Folk Fest, you're all over town in the bars, playing lots of little pickup gigs and stuff like that.
I have got my hands full that week.
Yeah, yeah. How much of that's arranged? How much of it's jamming?
I would say probably 50-50.
Okay.
And then by the time that week gets here, it's like 75 impromptu, and the other 25%, that's what we planned on doing.
Yeah, yeah. So the thing I think my favorite part of the whole Folk Fest is wandering around at the non-event part. I love those jam sessions that get started out in the front, on the halls over at Centennial, particularly if the featured artists come out and jam with everybody.
Sure,
then it's just
that's one of the beautiful parts about the whole thing.
It really is.
And they usually try to find people that are people that want to come out and interact with, you know, the local folks and pick up what they can or share what they can. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's wonderful because all of a sudden you're
playing. They had a few guests that weren't quite so. They showed up, stayed in the hotel room, smoked cigarettes, came and did their show. Went back to the hotel room, came back the next night or Friday night after the main or the Wednesday show and did the exact same set.
Yeah.
And then didn't really hang out with the
crowd.
Well,
it sure wasn't true of those guys last year. I mean, they were all over.
Yeah,
the
most
Centennial
of them
Hall.
Usually are. Most of them are all over the place sitting in with anybody they can.
Yeah. And it's I think that's the most amazing thing about the Folk Fest. So are you doing a gig?
Oh, let's see. I think I'm playing.
You got 15 minutes of fame in
the
show?
Well, I got 15 minutes with Sammy. Okay. I think that's 10:30 slot on Thursday. And I'm playing with the Sean McColl trio with Joe Carson and Sean McColl, and it's kind of jug band Sean style.
Yeah.
And I think that's Friday night. And then with those fellas, the jug band or the trio will be playing at the Red Dog.
Okay.
That Saturday evening, if I'm so correct.
Okay. So the next chance we get to really do something wonderful with you is on Wednesday night at the Gold Town when we're going to have
a
kind of a back-and-forth talk session
mm-hmm.
with the audience while you play.
And Katie's a wonderful host.
Yeah, and she's Harrison B. is going to be there as well. We got a little Harrison B. music to step out of here with as we finish this up. Anything else coming up on your gig list that we need to know about?
Oh, goodness. Goodness, I've been trying to stay up on this because I've let Sammy take care of all that now, and Sean or Joe with the other band just because it makes my life easier when somebody else has to figure the stuff out. Say, show up, be there. Wednesday, well, I usually do Thursday nights at the hotel for open mic. Then there's...
Which hotel?
The Alaskan.
Oh, okay.
And then I think the week of Folk Fest, Sammy and I are doing the Wednesday night as a jam night kind of thing.
Yeah, at the Alaskan again.
And then, I'm playing something next door at the Jack on the 27th, I think it is.
Oh, okay.
With Sammy. I forget exactly what the whole shindig is or what it's called or billed as, but we're going to do a lot of rehearsing and some dress rehearsals and a couple sound checks, I guess, so it sounds like a pretty big deal.
Yeah. Okay, well, maybe find out about that when you come Wednesday night. Katie B. will open up the door, I think, at 7 o'clock on Wednesday night. Tickets are $10 if you get them at krnn.org. If you wait till you come to the door, it costs you $2 more to get in. And basically, you and Harrison B. from Tennessee are the show. Let's listen to a little of his music on our way out of here.
There you are. up in a row, one of the crossroads, and my hell below. I feel like I'm made. Cause when that soul in surrounds me and I see all of these here and people need it. So I take my two left feet and I keep the beam and I keep the sweet soul. Please let me finish. Ain't it funny how
music all the way is from Harrison B. He's going to be on stage with C. Scott Fry. They're both appearing in the KRNN, the last of these KRNN special things that we've been doing around town. Americana from Nashville to Alaska at 7 to 9 p.m. Wednesday night, this Wednesday night at the Gold Town Nickelodeon Theater. So plan on coming on out and listening to some good music. And part of the gig is that you're going to have a chance to be able to talk to the musicians. So well worth it. If you want to talk to chickens, that's what we're going to be talking about here next. Darren Snyder is here, and he's here to tell us about how it is that he has the guts to publish something called April Fowls Day on a poster and suggest that people come and listen to information about chickens. Darren is the extension agent, so he really does have an excuse for doing this kind of stuff. Hi, Darren.
A good excuse, yeah. Yeah, thanks, Pat. It's you know, chickens are just fun, and so we might as well have fun with them. And fortunately, they're just it really works to raise chickens here in Juneau, and a lot of people are interested in that, and I'm just responding to that interest and that need, and trying to just kind of provide a venue for people to share with each other about how to raise chickens here in Juneau, and to bring in some experts, and to get a forum together, people to talk about it, people to visit each other's coops, and have a few demonstrations here and there, and just have a good time of it.
Now, the first time you did this, you called it Clucko de Mayo, because it was on the 5th of May, right?
Yes, indeed.
Right. But now it's April Fowls Day, and it's actually on the 6th of April, not the 1st, okay?
Yep.
9 to 5, and you're doing this at the UAS Library.
Yep.
Which probably precludes most people bringing their chickens to the actual event.
Yeah, we don't. You know, there's been talk. In fact, who knows? It may just come to fruition about getting a little bit of a chicken strut or a chicken kind of a walk-off or something like that. But, you know, we wouldn't want to have too many male chickens around or else they might get ornery with each other. But I haven't thought that one through. But we have definitely a good venue there at the UAS Library, plenty of space for all the chicken lovers to get out there and talk chicken with each other. We've got some things in the works. One is potentially a chicken run in the morning to have some of our Southeast Roadrunners. They're looking at the potential for doing a run that morning just mm-hmm. to kind of to have an excuse to go for a run, but also just to have another kind of thing, a way to kick off the day for those mm-hmm. people who are into that. And otherwise, we're just going to get started up at 9 a.m. And get rolling with a panel of experts. And then this year, we're not going to offer a lunch because it costs us like $20 a person to do that. And that was the only real reason why the registration, the only real cost to the production. So we're going to pull that out and let people either have lunch on their own, or we're trying to drum up a group who might offer to do a barbecue fundraiser or something for lunch. So
barbecue chicken, no doubt.
Indeed, that would be very okay. appropriate.
So what is the tour de coupe?
Well, it's an opportunity to kind of do very similar to the garden tours that have gone on for years here in Juneau and elsewhere. But some of our generous coop owners have offered up their coops to take a look and for others to see pretty much how simple it can be. But it can also be pretty elaborate. As we noticed last year, that there are some people really put some effort into them. Ari Stassi last year showed us his, and he has a really nice coop that's kind of attached to his house there, kind of a shed style, but really nicely done. And then Joy Lyon, who's got hers, Joy and Rich, who've got theirs kind of tucked underneath some stairs and kind of with a little run between the two, the chicken run and some of the other areas. It's kind of, it's great. You know, there's a lot of opportunity to be creative and to create a nice space for your birds.
Darren, whenever I talk to somebody about the idea of having chickens in Juneau, the business of eagles comes up almost instantly.
Mm-hmm.
How bad a problem is that for us?
Well, it's something that you need to be aware of. Hawks as well can come in, and weasels and even ravens can be a problem. Dogs are definitely something to be considered.
Yeah.
And so you do have to take those considerations. And, you know, I'm amazed sometimes that bears don't bother certain coops. You'd assume that maybe they would sniff them out and go after them. But as long as you're keeping the feed well secured, then they generally are not attracted to the birds for some reason.
Hmm.
Unless they actually get a taste for chicken, most people don't have any trouble with bears. And in fact, a lot of bear coops are not secured against a bear attack, but they just don't give them trouble.
So I would imagine that touring around and looking at how people have constructed their coops would give you some ideas of how to make a defense against the bird population particularly.
Yeah.
I don't know what you do about weasels. They're
It's about mesh size and netting for the birds, but mesh size to keep the weasels out. It's got to be pretty tight.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably like a 3/4-inch mesh. Because they're little heads, they can squeeze through real small.
You have to bury it down into the ground, I think, too.
Yeah.
From digging under.
True.
Okay. Well, I guess the other thing that is a problem with us is the cold weather, I think, normally reduces egg production if you're raising chickens for eggs.
And light even more so. And so, you know, you need to have a supplement of the light and a lot of people don't do anything for the heat, and it's moderate enough down here that they're not going to be ill affected by the light by the heat, but the light is more of a concern, and people can keep the production at nearly the what you're shooting for is one a day if you can,
mm-hmm.
and usually it's a little bit less than that, but you can keep it up pretty well even in the off months.
Yeah.
With some light supplementation.
I had chickens in Fairbanks and in Great Falls, Montana, and I'm telling you right now, you had to. That was an engineering problem to deal with, was how to get enough heat for the things to survive the winter. It was really kind of interesting to do that.
Did you ever have to deal with what to do with a bird once it either stopped laying or you found out that you had a male that you weren't allowed to keep or anything like that?
Well, both of the places I lived, I was out far enough out of the city limits that I didn't have any problem with that. But I once had a rooster that developed an ability to attack me every time I went into the coop. And eventually I found him another owner.
That's one way of dealing with it.
Yeah.
And another way is if you wanted to figure out how to dress out a deer per se, we have a demonstration planned again this
dress
year.
Dress out a chicken.
Dress out a chicken. Sorry, yeah,
right.
Yep.
Obviously, your mind is elsewhere. Must be the season.
Yeah, you know, usually think of it in different ways.
Right.
But we do have a demonstration planned at the end of the day there, the end of the day for us and the end of the day for a chicken to go ahead and show people the proper way to kill a chicken and to defeather it and clean it and all that process, because it can be kind of intimidating until you've gone through it once or twice.
Yeah.
And Wendy Smith has done a great job of that, showing us last year, and she's offered to do that again this year.
Well, this sounds like in one afternoon or one day from 9 to 5 on Saturday, April 6th, you can learn pretty much everything you need to know to be able to raise chickens in Juneau.
Absolutely.
What a fine service. The ideal thing to play immediately after our discussion, of course, is our weekly special program called Bird Note. So let's go to there. Thank you, Darren.
Thank you, Pat, for
organizing the event and for coming and telling us about it.
You're welcome.
This is Bird Note. That odd call that sounds like a rusty gate? We're actually hearing a pair of bald eagles, and they're getting ready to nest. Bald eagles build large stick nests in tall trees, which they use year after year. And these nests endure rough treatment. Young eagles perch on the edge and flap their wings while holding on with their feet to avoid premature departure. This upward tugging can pull apart sections of the nest. The young birds may also yank at sticks with their beaks and chuck them over the side. Weather and wind take their toll too. So every year the eagles have to rebuild their bulky nests. An eagle looking for material may fly at a dead branch that's still attached to a tree. Coming in feet first, the bird hits the branch with its talons and, using its forward momentum, breaks off the limb. The eagle then carries the branch, often up to 5 feet long, back to the nest and wedges it in. And here's something amazing. Bald eagles have been known to carry sticks more than a mile to their nest. Bird Note is also available as a podcast. Find out more when you visit our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
It's spring cleaning season. Time to divest yourself of those records you've been hoarding, those CDs you've downloaded, and those videos you already know the endings of, and bring them down to KTOO for the used media sale, scheduled for this Saturday from 9 a.m. till noon at the KTOO building. For more information, call Jeff and call Jeff and call Jeff and call Jeff and call Jeff Brown at 463-6425. Thanks.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 19th of March, 2013. 1842, on this day, a play by Balzac opened at the Odeon Theatre in Paris, La Ressource de Quinola, the story of an inventor during the Spanish Inquisition. Balzac was a prolific writer, drank 50 cups of coffee each day, which he said was like sparks shooting all the way up to the brain. To promote his play, he tried a publicity stunt. He started a rumor that tickets were completely sold out, assuming then that people would turn out to see what all the excitement was about. Instead, people assumed they couldn't get tickets, and nobody came. It's the birthday of Philip Roth, born in Newark, 1933. His parents, both children of Jewish immigrants from Eastern Europe, majored in English, taught English, went off to Chicago, to the University of Chicago, became friends with Saul Bellow. And when he was 26 years old, he published his first book, a novella and short stories entitled Goodbye Columbus. And it made his reputation and won the National Book Award. And then 10 years later, 1969, he published Portnoy's Complaint, a monologue delivered by Alexander Portnoy to his analyst. It got rave reviews. It was controversial because of the sexual content, and it was the best-selling book of 1969. It's the birthday of Gogol, Nikolai Vasilievich Gogol, born in Great Shorshinsky, Ukraine in 1809. His father owned a vodka distillery and had more than 300 serfs. And young Nikolai, after graduating from school, went off to St. Petersburg, ready to take on the world. He tried acting, then he tried writing poetry, and then prose, short stories. And his first book, Evenings on a Farm near Dikonka, was a big success in 1831, and a few years later, he produced a comic play, The Government Inspector, which was an even bigger hit. His most famous stories include The Nose, about a nose that takes off on its own, dressed up in uniform, acting like a human being, and The Overcoat. Gogol became a religious fanatic, the follower of an Orthodox priest who convinced him that all art was sinful. He fasted so severely that he destroyed his health, and he died at the age of 43. Here's a poem for today by Jack Riddle, Here in the Time Between. Here in the time between snow and the bud of the rhododendron, we watch the robins look into the gray and narrow our view to the patches of wild grasses coming green, the pile of ashes in the fireplace, haphazard sticks on the paths and gardens, leaves tangled in the ivy and periwinkle lie in wait against our will. This drawing near of renewal of stems and blossoms, the hesitant return of the anarchy of mud and seed, says not yet to the blood's crawl. When the deer along the stream look back at us, we know again we have left them. We pull a blanket over us when we sleep, as if living in a prayer. We say amen to the late arrival of red, the stun of green, the muted yellow at the end of every twig. We will lift up our eyes onto the trees, hoping to discover a gnarled nest within the branches' negative space, and we will watch for a fox sparrow rustling in the dead leaves underneath. Here in the Time Between, a poem by Jack Riddle, from Practicing to Walk Like a Heron, published by Wayne State University Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Reputation.com, helping professionals and businesses look their best when people search for them online. Learn more at 1-800-REPUTATION. Produced by Nick Vetter, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 13 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. And my next two guests are here to tell us a little bit about a unique school in Juneau. We have a charter school that lives within the boundaries of the Juneau School District. And with me are Margie Hamburger, who is, I guess you're kind of like the principal, but not with that title, right?
Yes, and my job has some principal-like duties, but I'm more... it's more appropriate to call me like a site manager.
Okay.
Because we share leadership in our school with not only our teachers, but also with parents.
And Margie's fine to have on as a guest, but we also have a delightful young lady here who is really the star of this show, and that's Lily Otze. And maybe some of you know who this is. If you went to see King Island Christmas when it played 6-7 times, she most of the time, I think, through that series of performances was the walrus. So sings wonderfully. Hi, Lily.
Hi.
Hi. I'm glad you're on the show. So, Margie, tell us about how a community charter school can live inside a school district.
Well, there's state statute in Alaska, as there is in many states, I think all states, that permits this form of a school where some entity, in this case parents, came forward and designed a school that might differ in some way from the mainstream curriculum. And then you go through a bunch of lots of hoops to be approved, as we were about 16 years ago, I think. And then you get to be a charter school, but you're still a public school, still free. In our case, any student in Juneau can be placed in our school, if provided there's room. So we're still public, but nevertheless, we can operate with some different curriculum, some different structure. As I said, we don't have a principal. We have this shared leadership model, and just can propose ways in which you want to operate different and deliver curriculum somewhat differently, still with the same ends, of course, of educating our children.
Now, Lily, what grade are you in?
I'm in sixth grade.
You're in sixth grade. Okay. So have you been to the going to the charter school all along? Is that?
Yeah, I've been here since kindergarten.
Okay. Now, you're in a sixth grade class, but in your classroom, there's like students who are in, not all in the sixth grade, right?
Yeah, there's sixth, seventh, and eighth all combined, but then we split them up into two different classrooms. And that we sometimes join together, but most of the time we're in separate classrooms and we switch, so the teachers get chances to do different subjects with us.
Margie was saying when we were talking before we went on the air that the philosophy of the school is that you may not be what we would think of as a sixth grader in terms of the school. You might be more advanced some places and less advanced, or catching up in others and like that. Are you kind of that way? Do you do some things with sixth graders and some things with seventh graders and so forth?
Well, like in my math, I'm in the seventh grade math group, so I think all of the sixth graders, or most of the sixth graders, are in the seventh grade math group. But most of the rest of things, we're not always just the sixth graders together. Sometimes it's sixth graders, seventh graders, and eighth graders, because maybe we're doing. It's also just based on sometimes, sometimes we have math and the other people are doing writer's workshop. And so it's not always about the level you're at. It's just kind of sometimes about who is going where and what times you're doing what.
Mm-hmm.
All our classrooms are multi-grade. So even we have a kindergarten first mix, second and third, fourth and fifth, and then, as Lily said, the middle school. And so oftentimes it's hard for the students to know, unless they're paying attention to, I'm in this group with fifth graders, I'm in this group with seventh graders. But oftentimes it's a little bit not so transparent to the student. They're more working at their level. For example, if they have a piece of writing, of course the teacher knows what the expectations for that student are and is going to challenge them and push them, but push them according to her knowledge or his knowledge of where that student is at and what their particular strengths and weaknesses are and what they need to work on. So it's not always clear. We don't use a lot of textbooks, although we do some in the math. We don't use a lot of workbooks or worksheets, so it's the teachers do a lot of creating their own curriculum, again, based on the students and the interests and some of the goals that they have for meeting the standards and achieving success for the students.
At the beginning of the school year this year, there was quite a controversy about classroom size. As a matter of fact, it led to, I think, parents in some of the elementary schools actually demanding that they hire more teachers, mm-hmm. and there were meetings and all that sort of thing. I gather that one of the real advantages to the charter school is the fact that you've got more people per student because of the model.
Well, we have a fixed number of students, and that leads us into why we're on the radio and some reasons this time of year is because it's starting to be our recruitment time for parents who are interested for next year. And the reason we need to do that is we do have a fixed number. For example, we strive for a parent-teacher ratio, a pupil-teacher ratio of 22 to 1, so one teacher per 22 students. And although occasionally we go outside of that for various reasons, like the year when we had unexpectedly twins that we didn't know about, so we took 23. But so we kind of live outside of that thing where we already know we have 22 spots to fill for that particular classroom, and then unfortunately sometimes have to turn some people away who might wish to be there.
So how does someone get their child into the charter school, or what process do they have to go through if they're interested?
Well, there is a placement process with an application to be filled out, which is now available. They can call the school, they can go to any school site or go on the district website and get that. It's very simple. It's not like you have to fill out any essays. It's just who are you, what grade level is your student. And then there's a few questions that address whether you meet one of these diversity categories. We strive really hard in our optional programs, of which we are one, to have our classrooms reflect the kind of diversity we would see in any other classroom in the district. So there's some efforts towards that. And then basically it's just kind of a random selection. If you have a sibling in the school, that might give you some preference in getting a placement over somebody who doesn't. So we try and keep families together because family is really important in our school. We have a lot of parent involvement, and we really work with that. And we really see our school as a partnership between parents and teachers in educating children.
I have friends who have children in the charter school, and it seems to me that they are involved with activities in the charter school almost every night of the week. There's a tremendous amount of involvement. So you really are kind of a family orientation.
We are very family oriented, but also being family oriented, different levels of involvement, you know, depending on what people's work schedule are or what they can contribute. There's all different ways of being involved. And like you say, some people seem to be there all the time. Some people can come less frequently, but that works well, too. We always have jobs for people to keep them involved and connected.
I know you do fundraising activities. Is there a tuition for this school?
No, it's a public school.
It's
free.
It's public school. Okay.
If we do any fundraising, it's no more or less than you would see in any other school where they might be selling, you know, wrapping paper or raffle tickets or something.
Right.
You know, we're always looking. We just bought some guitars this year. We have to thank Northern Light United Church, who we got a grant from them to purchase a set of guitars for our guitar program. We do a lot of music and art, so that's a little nod to that.
So, Lily, is it all books and music, or is there do you do activities too?
I think we do. We do a lot of hands-on stuff also, and so like in our classes, like right now we're actually planting plants in our science class right now, and that's going really cool. It's not all just books. We do a lot of interactive things and activities, and like in PE, our Dirk Miller is our PE teacher. He's really fun, and we've just finished doing archery with him, so that was really fun.
Yeah,
we try and get out of the building a lot.
Yeah,
and use things like the museum, the resources in Juneau, going outside to get on the water, go hiking. What other things, Lily, have you done for field trips?
We did help. They were building this little trail behind Gastineau, and we helped them build that trail a little bit. We were out there, and we've gone hiking up Mount Roberts. We've gone to Dye Pack quite a few times, and we do the Glory Hole. You can sign up and go cook for the Glory Hole on the first Friday of each month, and so that's a community service thing that we do.
Yeah, have you been down there too?
Yeah, I've been down there a couple times.
What's your specialty?
I don't really know.
Yeah. Now, your music talent obviously is something that is quite amazing, but I'm wondering how much you've been able to do with that in the school as opposed to with the youth choir and like that.
We've done quite a lot, because my first music teacher was more focused on singing, I think, and then so I've gotten quite a bit of a diversity of arts and music, because I've, and then our second one, I think, was more focused on, we did, like, recorder, and we did singing, too, and I think we did some drums and stuff like that, and then the music teacher we have now, I had him last year, but I do not have him this year, and he, I think he is really focused on guitar, and that was really fun last year. I got to learn how to play the guitar with my fellow fifth graders. And then this year I'm doing band, which has been really fun, with Sandy Fortier.
What are you playing?
I'm playing trombone.
Trombone. Ooh,
yeah.
Cool.
It's really fun.
Yeah, I guess it is.
Pat, I want to make sure that I get a chance to mention that we really want parents to come and visit us again during this outreach period. The applications are due April 19th, and people can call the school at 586-2526 at any time to arrange a visit or to come talk. But we also have a couple of open houses. Can I?
Yeah, go ahead.
So on April 3rd, which is a Wednesday, we have an open house in our kindergarten first grade classroom from 2 to 4 p.m. We encourage anyone to come then and meet the teacher and talk about the school. And later that evening from 4 to 6, we have an open house for the remainder of the school, a little bit more heavily focused on the middle school.
Okay.
And then the following day on the 4th to come during when school is open, anytime during the school day, and come and observe classes in session and, again, learn more about what our program is like and how it might be a good fit or not for your family and for your kid.
Wow. Well, Lily, Maggie, thank you so much for coming down. Thanks for giving us a look at the charter school, and I hope people take advantage of the open houses.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you.
The harp music in the background is Diana Stork, and she is giving a concert here in Juneau, The Art of the Harp. It'll be on Saturday, March 30th at 7 p.m. at Northern Light United Church. You're in tune with KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also broadcast on a set of translators that are located throughout the area. You get a better signal off in the Valley and Auk Bay by tuning to K276 AF on 103.1 MHz. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, we come in a little clearer on K269AO at 101.7. Then we go out to the islands. Gustavus listens on K201 AM at 88.1. Tuna is on K220BT. They're 91.9 megahertz. And Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, KTOO signal is heard at 89.9 megahertz on K210 AS. In Juneau, you can also receive K200 on GCI Cable Juneau. We're on digital channel 871. KRNN, our sister station, on 872. And KXLL is on 873. And we're also online, streaming continuously at www.ktoo.org. Andy Klein will be your host tomorrow. He's going to have the folks from Seminar, the Perseverance Theater current play in. Susan Cox will be here. She has Saturday's Girl Scout dinner and auction. And we'll get a preview of tomorrow night's KRNN Spotlight Concert with Harrison B. Stay tuned now for All Things Considered. Pat Moore, your host today. Thanks for listening.